Jennifer Mallinson, hello.
Hello, Jim.
You did what many New Zealanders have done in a minor way, retracing the steps and often visiting the obscure resting places, for example, of Kiwi soldiers who may have died in both the big wars, and in your case, with this book, World War II. Why did you decide to set out on this project?
Well, the main reason was I didn't know much about it myself, and I couldn't reply to Italian friends about New Zealand action in Italy or the actual role of the New Zealanders within the Italian campaign. I was very sure that they had been there, and the Italians were very surprised. Really? What ever for? Why did they come here? And how many were there? And all these questions popped up. And, of course, I didn't have all the answers. That began my quest for information. And then I decided to go and look at some of these little unknown places in the south of Italy, which I had never heard of and never knew that previously that New Zealand soldiers were associated with these places. And as I went into it, I became more and more intrigued about the experience of the Kiwi soldiers and the route they travelled, which was most unusual.
You obviously, we've picked up already, know Italy quite well. You shifted there at some stage out of New Zealand.
Yes, I moved to Europe in the early 1970s.
Gee, a long time ago.
Yes, a long time ago. And then, travelling around the European continent, I decided that Italy was the country I wanted to experience and found a teaching job in Verona. And I just fell in love with the place. And I said to my mother, oh, I'm going to stay another year. Do you mind? And then it became another year and another year.
And many more years. From Taranto to Trieste, obviously this could be a holiday route for New Zealanders to take using your book because of its interest to us. So if someone did that, is it cheap to do if we stayed in the places you stayed, took the transport you took and so on? Is it a viable route on your holidays?
It's a viable route if you're self-driving. Hmm. The distances aren't enormous. Like, for example, the first transfer of the division from Taranto up to Abruzzo, where they had their first conflict, was a 3-day journey for them.
I didn't realise that from Taranto to Trieste is still such a thing, because on TripAdvisor you can find recommendations for the best truck stop diner and so on. Mm. And obviously it's a route more easily travelled now than the New Zealanders found it in the mid-1940s.
Yes, that's definitely true. But if you're stopping along the routes I went, you won't perhaps find the truck stops because you're not on the main roads.
On the main drags, no. So the men of the 2nd New Zealand Division who had been fighting in North Africa arrived, as you say in your introduction, with false optimism about the task ahead because they were glad to come back to civilization, as it were, weren't they?
Yes, that was partly it, but they were flush from their victory in the desert, of course. Reinforcements had arrived, and the division also now had its own armour. So it was coming into Italy as a little army, quite self-sufficient. It lacked only its own air cover. And they felt strong, and they also felt that the enemy was weakening. Definitely Italy was militarily out of the conflict. In fact, soon before the New Zealanders arrived in Italy, Italy had withdrawn from the conflict.
Yeah, which set a false scene, didn't it? Because there was a lot ahead of them. Can you describe briefly the journey they had to take as part of the 8th Army? Because it took them a long time, and they travelled an enormous distance, really.
Yes, this was the thing that really intrigued me, because they arrived in Taranto in October 1943, and they finished the war and the Italian campaign in Trieste, in the far northeastern corner of Italy, some 20 months later. This is an enormous length of time for any military unit to be in a single country. Mm. To realise that these young men back in the 1940s had lived nearly 2 years in Italy, which is a really uncommon thing. And, of course, they were there as soldiers. They weren't there on holiday. But there's a lot of downtime. And the whole background of being in a civilised and populated country And living in and around villages was a totally new experience and a very enriching and in some ways shocking experience for them, because they could see up close what war was doing to this population.
And many of the New Zealanders fell in love with Italy too, didn't they?
Yes, they did. Before arriving in Italy, their experiences were with the fascists, their experiences with Italian military disasters in North Africa. And when they came to Italy, the country, and met the ordinary civilians, the villagers, the peasants, the farm workers, the shopkeepers, they realised that this was a different people. And a Kiwi is not able to bear a grudge very long, I don't think. And they warmed to these people who warmed to them instantly and were offering hospitality, even if they had very little to offer. Mm. And they warmed to the culture with the song and the landscape they loved, often compared it to New Zealand.
And the Māori soldiers especially were beloved of the Italians as they went further north.
Yes, the Māoris, I think, had a much better, an easier rapport with the Italians. Their love of song, music, mm-hmm. and the Māori language, I think, equipped Māori better for learning Italian.
We don't need to reprise the entire strategic history of the later years of the war, but can you explain how 14,000 or so of our men, 2,000 of whom would die, came to trudge up Italy? Why were they there?
The New Zealanders were wanted in Europe because they had become a very good fighting force, a specialist force. They became quite an elite force in the British 8th Army. In the Italian campaign, they were used for specific tasks and transferred from one side of the country to the other, from the British sector to the American sector, because of their particular skills. Mm. They were used a lot in the mountains because they were known to be trained mountain troops, and Italy is very largely mountainous, they discovered. Also, they were very good at working at night. They were very fast moving. They could pack up and move and change their positions very rapidly and very efficiently.
So they landed in Taranto, as you say, in the south. And the castle, actually, because there are photos in your book. Mm. In many respects, it's a book about yesterday, but with a lot of today in it. And the castle is the must-see attraction, isn't it? It's so unusual.
Yes, this one is right on the water's edge, as many were, these medieval castles, to defend the town from the sea. The only one gateway into it, heavily fortified with a big moat. And so they were impregnable. In fact, that castle had never, ever been successfully besieged.
Yeah, you look at that castle and you know why it was never successfully besieged. Your next stop was the port of Bari, which had only just been wrested off the Germans when the New Zealanders arrived. And then the Germans counter-attacked. And a terrible secret was revealed when they attacked the Germans.
Yes. When they attacked, they bombed the shipping in the harbour. And in the harbour were Allied shipping, and aboard secretly was nerve gas. Mm. Of course, you weren't allowed to use gases in war. It was illegal, but the enemy may have thought about using it, and so the Allies had to have it ready on hand in case they needed to retaliate. Naturally, this destruction of this gas was a natural disaster in the harbour of Bari and caused a lot of deaths amongst civilians as well as soldiers and sailors. The truth about it only came out very recently.
Yeah.
It was a war secret.
Yeah, and a fairly ghastly one. When the New Zealanders reached the Sangro River and went into battle, the weather was horrible. They had a lot to put up with in that Italian campaign.
Yes, they did. They had to deal with a lot of rain, which turned the roads to mud, and a very clingy, gluey mud, which made it almost impossible to move. And there are many archive pictures showing the vehicles up to their axles in this sort of porridge, you know, and it was an extremely difficult situation. And then they had snow before Christmas, and they had a white Christmas on the Sangro, their first white Christmas. And this was their first winter in Europe. It was very severe. They would have another one the following year further north.
Yeah, no, they struck it bad with the weather. And can you tell us also about the Gustav Line? Because its anchor point, as it were, was a place we've come to know well, Monte Cassino.
Yes, the Gustav Line stretches across the narrowest part of the Italian peninsula, and it was the strongest, most heavily defended German defence line in southern Italy. They chose that point because it was narrow, because it followed the ridges of the mountains, which almost reach coast to coast. And on top of these ridges, as visitors to Italy know, there are many little hilltop towns which lent themselves to be enemy defence positions. And between the towns along the ridges, they had established gun emplacements, bunkers and all kinds of devilry to prevent the attackers from reaching the top of the ridges.
All kinds of devilry. This is what the New Zealanders, although fairly early on they would have come to realise it, but they sailed from North Africa expecting an enemy on the run a bit, and in fact the enemy was determined not to give up Italy without a fight.
I don't know about on the run quite, but they felt that the tide had turned, and it had after North Africa. It looked as if they were going to get to Rome in no time, but it would take another year or 8 months.
Jennifer Mallinson is with us from Taranto to Trieste. Taranto to Trieste. I don't say, I anglicise it, not out of disrespect, but because I can't imitate your fine pronunciations. Tell us, there's a lot of detail in this book from a lot of photos you've taken on the way up the country. Can you tell us where you found the beautiful statue of Angelica, the symbol of, or Angelica, the symbol of all lost children, and the story behind that?
Angelica is at Anzio, near the beaches where the Anzio landings took place. Beautiful statue of this child who represents all lost children comes from a story of a British soldier who, at the time of the landing, found a small child on her own, and her name was Angelica, and he protected her and managed to take her to people who would look after her. And after the war, he came back to Anzio looking for her to find out what had become of this child, who had obviously lost her family and her parents. And he was never able to find her, unfortunately. And this statue was built to commemorate such children lost as a collateral effect of the battles.
And because it's an Italian statue, it's utterly beautiful, isn't it?
It is a beautiful statue.
For many listeners, we won't need to go over the battle at Cassino and the bombing of the Benedictine Abbey and what a tragic, in the end, schmozzle that all was, based partly on false intelligence. But that's what New Zealanders know most about the Italian campaign, and possibly a lot of us don't know a lot more than that. And I suppose that was the most important part of it. Would you say it was or not?
Well, it was certainly one of the greatest battles of World War II in Europe. And the New Zealand role in it was significant, of course, because of the four battles fought at Cassino. The New Zealand Corps, which was headed by the New Zealand Division with Freyberg as its commander, fought two of these major battles.
The Māori Battalion fought with great skill and bravery at Monte Cassino and suffered terrible losses with no tank or anti-tank support, didn't they?
Yes.
It's a beautiful graveyard at Monte Cassino.
It is a beautiful graveyard.
It's one of the loveliest you'll ever see.
It's directly below Monte Cassino, and it's a very, very special experience to go there and walk among the graves of rows and rows of young New Zealanders.
When you look up at that hill with the abbey on top of it, it's easy in 2019 to go and look up at it not knowing what was happening in 1944, but it just seems impregnable. And what a,
yes. What a, well, it did, and it's easy to see why the soldiers were afraid of it.
Yeah,
they were almost paranoid about it. And it is very close, directly above the town, and it is a fortress. Anybody going to visit the abbey today can see that it is a medieval fortress.
A lot of our troops had gone north even while that battle was happening. It's hard to imagine today that they were carrying their heavy gear on mules as they went into the hilly areas, the mountainous areas you describe. You met an old man named Benedetto, who had been a 9-year-old boy when the Kiwis came, and that was emotional.
That was a very emotional encounter. He kindly came and told me the story of how he and his mother and several siblings had been taking refuge during the battles for a couple of months in caves in the hillside nearby, because the Italians don't want to leave their home area. Nothing will make them leave their homes and all they possess, or their land or their animals. They stayed nearby in terrible conditions and had just come out after the end of the battles and were watching this great mass of humanity, which was the American 5th Army and the British 8th Army, packing up and leaving the casino area. And the young children, of course, were fascinated by anything to do with the soldiers, and they could see this was the end of a period of their life and the beginning of a new one. Watching the soldiers go by in this massive parade as they left the town, he said, they were all looking ahead and all talking amongst themselves and busy with what they were going to do next and looking at the road. Nobody bothered to look at the civilians along the side of the road. And these bedraggled, poor, hungry, dirty civilians, he said. But then the New Zealanders came along and he said, and they did look at us. And they looked at us children, he said, and they smiled. And he said, and we smiled back. And we'd never done that for months. Mm. And he said it felt like spring. And he was very emotional when he was telling the story. And I could imagine how you suddenly realize there's been no cause for joy for months. And now perhaps life is changing again for
him. That's a nice story and a tribute to the New Zealand character and demeanor.
Yes, yes.
There were two sides. I know you say it's not a military history, but there's a lot of military history in it. There were two sides, for example, because the New Zealanders hooked up with the Italian partisans fighting the Germans, and there were two sides to that. One example is that an attack by the partisans that killed 33 SS members on the outskirts of Rome saw ghastly reprisals.
Yes. Hitler demanded 10 civilian lives for every German soldier. And this had to be done within something like, I think it was 48 hours, which was a near impossible task unless you really go house to house just shooting people. And in the prisons, they didn't have even enough prisoners, let alone prisoners on death row, shall we say, who could satisfy this number. And so they just took in the civilian family members who were there at the time visiting and then went out and picked up anybody else who had a sort of a black mark against his name in the streets to make up the number. And they took them out in trucks out to these caves just outside what was then on the outskirts of Rome, the Ardeatin Caves. And there they shot them.
It's a terrible, terrible story.
It's a horrendous story.
But your book is also a travelogue of sorts, from Taranto to Trieste, Jennifer Mallinson. So where do you live exactly in Italy?
I live in Verona, which is not on the Kiwi route. No New Zealanders got to Verona during that period, as far as I know.
It's interesting, you who have been away from New Zealand for so long get asked about the role of New Zealanders in World War II, don't know a lot about it, have turned this into a major book, actually, in terms of it's telling a history that not many of us know a lot about. Emotionally, this must have been quite a deep experience for you.
It has been an enormous experience. And I felt very quickly on the journey a close identity with the young Kiwi soldiers and how little knowledge they had before of the countries they were going to be operating in, and also seeing how they behaved and how they reacted and their comments. I could feel although I have been away a long time, I'm still at heart a Kiwi, and I could feel a close relationship with them. And it was very, very emotional to actually stand at places and think about the soldiers being right there. Some of the areas are still very much the same when you get out into the battlefield.
Would it make a good pilgrimage? Because obviously thousands and thousands of present-day New Zealanders will have had men in the family back then who fought in the Italian campaign. A lot of them still. Would this make a good pilgrimage for those families?
Oh, definitely. It's a fascinating journey. There are many, many people there now. I met several this year who were doing parts of it.
Well, you're back in your home country for a little while and a long time away, and an interesting book you've produced, and congratulations on it. It's
thank you very much.
Substantial work. Jennifer Mallinson's been our guest from Taranto to Trieste.